Shri Mahalasova Jai Ama Shri Mahalasova.
Sounds True presents Natural Perfection, teachings, meditations, and chants from the Dzogchen tradition of Tibet. Tape 2 with Lama Surya Das.
Hi, good morning, America the Beautiful. This is your wake-up call from Lama Sirius Das. You're our very own Pajama Lama here at Morning Radio WYYY, AMFMNFLCIOBS Radio. Good morning, America the Beautiful. American Buddhas, awaken. Throw off your chains, your concepts. Wake up. Attention. Listen up. Pay attention. It pays off. Hi, seriously, I'm Lama Sirius Das from the happy lineage of the Hahayana. In Buddhism, in the ancient timeless wisdom tradition of Buddhism, we have many different schools called yanas or vehicles, approaches, to travel the path. And I subscribe more and more of late, as I get older and sillier, to the Hahayana, the happy lineage of the inmate great confection. Oh, how sweet it is. I think it's important, as I know you do, to lighten up as we enlighten up and not take ourselves so damn seriously. I remember in the early days, in the early 70s, when I used to frequent insight meditation courses in India of my first teacher, S.N. Goenka, the teacher of many of today's Vipassana teachers in the West, and a wonderful man. And whenever I would go and see him and report my marvelous meditation experiences or my difficulties with back pain or knee pain or boredom, but particularly my wonderful meditation experiences of feelings of soaring, of bliss in my whole body, or whatever I managed to put together after meditation, 10-day or 20-day intensive silent meditation retreats in vegetarian India, he would always say, "Very good, very good. Just keep meditating." No matter what I brought to him, what jewels or what turds I brought to him, he would say, "Very good, keep meditating." And to this day, 30 years later, I feel like he's still saying it. And that's the whole point, really. We're on a journey. We enjoy what goes by out the window. We can enjoy the scenery. But we don't need to get sidetracked and stop forever in any one of those little byways along the way. Meditation similarly is like that. It's about letting go. It's about letting come and go and letting be. It's about attention to things as they are. And reality, after all, if we attend to it, we will notice. It is a process, not static, but somewhat ecstatic. It's flowing. It's shifting. It's dynamic. It's, to use the Buddhist buzzword, impermanent. It's tenuous and fleeting. It's slipping through our fingers. And if we hold on to what's slipping through our fingers too tight, we get rope burn. That's why it's in our better interest, our enlightened self-interest, to let go a little more, not just to try to hold on too tightly to what's slipping through our very fingers even now. But better, as William Blake sang, "He who binds to himself a joy doth the winged life destroy." The Dzogchen view of the innate great perfection, the natural great completeness of things just as they are. The meditation of leaving it as it is, of resting in that, brings us to that kind of beyond action dynamism in which we are one with all conditions. We don't need to hold on to any particular way of being or feeling. My own teacher, the old Lama Gendun Rinpoche, once sang in Tibetan a spontaneous song of enlightenment, which we translated from the Tibetan. I'd like to share it with you. I think it is extremely vital to integrating the view, meditation, and action of Dzogchen. And as a kind of guided meditation, leading us into actually the formal guided meditation of sky gazing that I will follow with. This song is called Free and Easy, a spontaneous Vajra song. It's always been the custom of the enlightened ones, of the mystics, to write poems, songs, and prayers as spontaneous utterances in the joyful spirit of liberation, of awakening that spiritual experience inevitably brings. These are called dohas in Sanskrit, in the ancient Hindu and Buddhist traditions of India. And we also see this in other traditions, from St. Francis's Song of the Sun to our beloved Sufi poet and master Rumi and his wonderful poems that we can read today, and so many other spiritual masters. So this is called Free and Easy, a spontaneous Vajra song by Yendan Rinpoche. Listen up. Imaho, happiness cannot be found through great effort and willpower, but is already present in relaxation and letting go. Don't strain yourself. There is nothing to do or undo. Whatever arises in the mind has no real importance, has no lasting significance. Why become attached to it and identify with it? Why pass judgment upon it and upon ourselves? Better let the entire game happen on its own, springing up and falling back again and again like waves in the sea, like a magic show, without changing, interfering, or manipulating anything. And notice how everything, like magic, vanishes and then reappears again and again, time without end. It's only our searching for happiness that prevents us from seeing it. It's like a rainbow which you pursue but can never quite catch, or a dog chasing its own tail, even catching it, so what? Although happiness and peace does not exist anywhere as a substantial thing, it is always available and accompanies you every instant. Don't be deceived by the momentary reality of positive and negative experiences, which are like weather in the immutable diamond-like sky. Wanting to grasp the ungraspable, you harm and exhaust yourselves in vain. But as soon as you open your tight fist of grasping and relax this grasping, infinite space is there, open, inviting, comfy. Dear Dharma friends, please make use of this spaciousness, this infinite openness and potential freedom, this inherent freedom and natural ease that is your birthright. Don't search any further. Don't get lost in the tangled jungles of doctrines and opinions, looking for the great elephant of enlightenment who is already quietly at home resting in front of your own hearth. Nothing to do, nothing to force, nothing wanting and nothing extra to get rid of. Imaho, marvelous. Everything happens by itself. We don't need to transform or purify it, although we can certainly work to be better people and alleviate suffering in the world. Still, we can't do it all. On the other hand, we're not free not to participate. As an ancient rabbi, Rabbi Hillel, said almost 2,000 years ago, if not you, who? And if not now, when? Now let's take this Dzogchen out for a spin. But please don't try this sky-gazing meditation if you're driving a car. We have to use common sense and be sane, as well as deepen our wisdom and compassion. Let's not go over the edge in the name of spirituality. That would be antithetical to our purposes. Sky-gazing or space-mingling meditation is another example of a natural Dzogchen meditation. It uses nature. It helps us mingle ourselves with the natural world. It's a beautiful form of nature mysticism. It's also a great way to practice outside or indoors with a window or a ceiling or before we go to bed, looking into the light at the back of our eyelids and so on, as I mentioned before. So we can tune into that inner light or that innate radiant clarity of natural awareness, the natural mind that's in all of us. As the Buddha said, O monks, the mind is by nature luminous, unconditioned, non-complex. It is only momentarily veiled by obscurations. So we're going to use this practice to relate directly to this inner light, what Tibetans call the clear light or the inner luminosity of awareness. We're going to practice this rigpa, this union of lucidity or awareness on the one hand and infinite openness or emptiness on the other hand through the sky-gazing meditation in order to see through duality, to see through ourselves, to go beyond ourselves, to bring ourselves into the state of rigpa, of natural contemplation. The sky, which represents the element of space or expansiveness, the infinite, has no shape or color. Therefore, it's a good analogy to the nature of our mind, beyond shape, beyond color, yet infinitely fertile and capacious, with room for everything. No one can say exactly where it begins or where it ends. It just is, ain't it? That's the marvel of it. This meditation leads us into a way of being that is in perfect harmony, attunement, and oneness with nature, including our own nature and the nature of everything and everyone around us. In this sky-gazing meditation, we will dissolve into the infinite by becoming as if one mingled with the infinite sky, with the great expanse, shunyata, the great void, or the infinite openness. Close your eyes, still your hands, take your Buddha seat. Relax, take a deep breath and let it out. Turn towards rather than away from yourself. Take another deep breath and let it out and relax. And chant ah softly or just what a release. Like a lion yawning in the morning when it leaps out of bed and stretches. This is your world. Roam fearlessly in it. Drop everything. Rest naturally and at ease. Come home to the here and now. Natural body is Buddha's body. Let it be. Drop the body. Let it be. Natural breath and energy is Buddha's breath energy, prana. Let it be. Natural breathing. Let Buddha breathe through you. And third, natural mind is Buddha mind. Rigpa. Innate. Great awareness, let it be. Dharmakaya, absolute reality. Let Buddha think, sense, and know through you. Natural mind is Buddha mind. Big mind, the great perfection. Simply be still. Observe. Attune. Center, ground. You know everything is right here. Drop the body, drop the breath of energy, speech, door, and dropping the mind. Sense who and what one is in that lucid instant of inner peace, clarity, and wholeness. You must be present to win. simplify your life by simplifying and clarifying your mind. Know yourself. See things just as they are in the present moment. Mindful of whatever momentarily presents itself in the body-mind continuum right now. Without judging it as good or bad, notice your liking and disliking and just let it be. You don't have to judge yourself for judging, let that be too. Simply continue on resting in the view, this sky-like nature of mind, this mirror-like awareness, the great perfection. Let the breath settle, let the body settle, let the mind settle naturally in its own way, in its own place, in its own time. Clarity naturally emerges from the mind when you stop shaking and stirring it, just like water becomes clear when you stop stirring it, let the mud settle to the bottom. Breathe in and out. That's very important. Don't forget. Breathe deeply and slowly. That's your job. No one else's. Letting go a little more with each breath. Letting go with each out breath. Follow the out-breath a little more, like following the sound of the gong, to where it dissolves out into the space, and let it go. Relinquishing, letting go a little more with each out-breath. Dropping a little more with each out-breath. A little depth with each out-breath. Before breathing in again. Moment by moment, breath by breath. Perfect moment, if the moment, the miracle of mindfulness, one moment at a time. Mindfulness is the sovereign, let it rule. Breathe, smile, be aware. Tune into that place of inner peace. Primordial peace beyond the dualism of noise and quiet. It's always there. Now, open your eyes. Lean back a little and relax and raise the gaze. Enter into the sky-gazing, space-mingling meditation of Dzogchen Tsempo, the radiant great perfection. Elevate the scope of panoramic awareness into 360-degree sphere of total, sensitive, receptive awareness. Sky-gazing, space-mingling, beyond outer and inner, not looking inside for anything, not looking out there for anything, nor getting caught up in between. Gaze evenly into space, empty space, the infinite openness, with a soft, gentle focus. No eye strain necessary. We have our eyes open all day. It shouldn't be any problem to meditate with our eyes open for a few minutes. Cast the eyes into the sky of space. Cast the thoughts off into awareness. Cast the mind or flood the mind into Rigpa, authentic presence, just being, primordial being. Space like mind has no beginning or end, no inside or outside, no form, no color, no size, no shape. Rest in this view. Stop along your busy road at this overlook, at this viewpoint. And enjoy the view. Allowing all thoughts, feelings, sensations, emotions to come and go. simply release them, let them rise and release themselves like waves in the sea, like bubbles bubbling up and bursting. Without driving them away, allow them to come and go. Watch the spectacle of one's projections and experiences. Mind moment after mind moment, moment by moment, breath by breath, one breath at a time. Letting go, breathing out with the out-breath, and breathing out, releasing whatever momentarily arises in the body-mind continuum. Follow the out-breath, out, out, out. Unfurl your infinite Buddha mind. Drop everything, past, present, and future. Rest in the eternal now, the timeless time, the moment of Dzogchen. Dissolve totally in this spacious, luminous, natural joy of non-meditation. To further enhance this sky-gazing, space-mingling technique of meditation, the meditation of seeing through or cutting through solidity, trekchud, we chant the user-friendly Dzogchen mantra, ah, the one-syllable mantra, ah, the seed syllable that condenses within it all the enlightened teachings. Take a deep breath now, and with exhalation, open your eyes and ears and mouth and heart wide. Raise your gaze and chant the resounding, relieving, ah. Do it with me. Join in. I can't hear you. Again, breathe in deeply and exhale like a great orgasmic release. Ah, that's better. Ah, reaching out to the whole universe with ah, releasing into the infinite. Ah, as far as you can go, follow that breath as far as it goes. And just rest there for one eternal instant, one moment of Dzogchen. That would be enough. That would be more than enough. Enjoy that moment. Before the breath comes back in, that moment of stillness. When you're not breathing, but you're not dead, who are you right then? Ask yourself. Sense directly. Who is experiencing my experience in that moment? Who am I? See if you can startle yourself into a fresh new way of seeing and being in that moment. Who am I? What am I? Plumb that bottomless abyss of luminous openness. Rest in that luminous, senseless openness. The natural state, the great perfection. Ah, yes. What a relief. What a release. We can just drop and let go. Then chant again to complete it with the threefold ah of body, speech, and mind. Buddha body, ah, Buddha speech, ah, Buddha mind, ah. Ah, chant with me three times. Ah, very good. Once more. Ah, American Buddhas, I hear you singing. Ah, Welcome to the moment of Dzogchen, the timeless time that is Dzogchen meditation. Meditation is nothing if not healing. In fact, one of the meanings of Dharma is that which heals. For the Buddha Dharma is like a panacea. It heals all our ills, our disease and unease. And meditation is its principal tool, meditation and its sister practice of contemplative or centering prayer, which we find in so many spiritual traditions throughout the world today. Mindfulness and awareness is the greatest medicine. It's like a wish-fulfilling jewel. It's like armor that protects us. It's like the sun and the moon which illumine our world day and night, and the stars which illumine us in the dream, in the bardo after death, and even in coma or unconsciousness. The inner light remains the light of awareness. Mindfulness is like the heart and soul of our spiritual life. Mindfulness and attention is the heart of meditation practice. Paying attention, it pays off. Mindful alertness is the sine qua non of meditation practice in all traditions. Without mindfulness, even doing long meditations or meditation retreats of days, weeks, or months, or years duration, we don't accumulate anything in terms of wisdom and love. We just accumulate piles of shit and piss over that period of time if we don't bring mindfulness and attention to our spiritual practice. We would just be going through the motions by rote without mindfulness. Mindfulness delivers us to the here and now. Mindfulness is our savior. Mindfulness and awareness is the luminous heart of the Dharma. Meditation is its main formal tool, and bringing it into our lives moment by moment in every activity is how we apply what we've learned in formal meditation sessions. It's what we bring into daily life, mindfulness in action, mindfulness in eating, mindfulness in speaking, mindful awareness of what we're doing with our hands, mindfulness of our thoughts, feelings, and emotions, mindful listening, opening the third ear, as it were, not just the third eye of clear unitive seeing, but the third ear of listening through paying attention, through cultivating mindful awareness. According to the view meditation of Dzogchen, first we discover this wish-fulfilling jewel of Rigpa or awareness within us, and then we must develop it. Just having a glimpse or just discovering it is not enough. That's the meaning of this meditation practice, that it's a path of cultivation, that we can bring this into our very lives, no matter what our lives look like. We can do it in church or synagogue, or we can do it without any religious institution or building or meditation room. We can cultivate mindfulness outdoors or indoors. We can practice awareness while we're speaking or silent. We can bring this loving attention into every part and compartment of our lives. In fact, this is where the rubber meets the road in daily life, through the action or the enlightened living that the view in the meditation results in. So how do we formally meditate? What are the building blocks to put together our meditation practice? First, we need to find a place and a way to sit. I'm talking now about basic Buddhist meditation, sitting meditation. Of course, there's also walking meditation, chanting meditation, and so on, self-inquiry. But basic sitting meditation from the beginning. We need to find a place to do this. A regular place will help us create the habit. We need to find a time of day to do it. We can do it any time. Whenever you do it is the best time. But in general, it's helpful to find a regular time of day, like I like first thing in the morning and many do. Find a regular place, a corner in your room, a place you like. Find a regular place and some comfortable clothes. Of course, you can meditate with a tie and jacket, with a tight skirt, whatever you like. But it's probably more comfortable if you have loose, baggy-fitting pants like yoga pants or pajama pants or shorts and a flowing shirt. So you can, in a sense, put your body away, put it to bed in a seated position. And if you can, do it every day for 15 minutes, half an hour, 40 minutes. That will do. It's quality that counts, not quantity. We're not being paid by the minute for meditating, after all. There are three phases to meditation. The first phase is arriving. So first, relax. Sit down. Find your true seat. Find your balance point. Like the way you sit on a bicycle or a horse or a chair, you find that balance point. So then you can relax without thinking about it or shifting around too much. Prop your butt up a bit if you sit cross-legged on the floor. So your body is like a tripod. Your two knees and your butt on the floor. So you don't tip over too much. And you don't have to lean back on a chair or couch, which might encourage you to fall asleep. The upright, erect posture helps you stay alert and erect. Keeps your awareness fresh. So make yourself comfortable. Relax and breathe a few times and arrive. Settle. This is very grounding and centering. Collect yourself here and now. Let everything settle in its own way, in its own place, in its own time. This is the first stage of the three-phase meditation, arriving. Then, having arrived and collected yourself, the second stage, intensifying. In intensifying, we might use different techniques like mindfulness of breathing or chanting a mantra and concentrating on that, or visualizations, all the different meditative techniques. Here we will just use breath watching, not breath counting, but just natural awareness practice, awareness of body, awareness of breathing, and awareness of whatever comes up in the mind in the present moment. This is natural Dzogchen awareness practice. This is the second phase, intensifying, heightening our consciousness, cultivating mindful awareness. Let the body remain natural. Just be aware of whatever you feel, physical sensations, or energy, the heat, cold, pulsing. Let the breath flow naturally and just be aware of that. Aware of breathing in while inhaling. Breathing in, calming and clearing the mind. And breathing out, relaxing, releasing, and smiling. So simple, so clarifying, so free. Aware of breathing. And third, aware of whatever momentarily presents itself in the mind, in the consciousness. Simply aware of it with a choiceless, non-judgmental attention or bare attention, pure mindfulness. Letting everything arise like reflections in the radiant, stainless, unchanging mirror of mind. So in this second phase of intensifying, just being aware of the body, of the breath, the energy, and third, of the mind and its processes, letting everything go in natural flow. And third phase is releasing. Releasing even that focus. Letting go. Following more the out-breath and just dissolving with that out-breath into space, into sky, into empty openness. Releasing. Open to the wisdom of allowing, of the natural flow, of the natural state, of the innate great wholeness or the great perfection of things left just as they are. That's the third phase, and actually the most important, the natural meditation of releasing. So these three phases are common to our meditation practice. We always have to arrive first and collect ourselves. Second, heighten or intensify our awareness and our mindfulness. And third, release it into the freedom of a panoramic awareness. And this may seem like a linear process going from 1, 2 to 3, but just notice that step 3, the great releasing and allowing, is actually brings us back to the beginning, to just being there, to the just sitting, to the just relaxing of the arriving stage. So we can begin again and again, and when we get stale or distracted, follow back to step 1, relaxing, and again step 2, to a little bit of intensifying and heightening our mindfulness and awareness, and then back to step 3 with the releasing and allowing. And this is a basic framework for any meditation that we may do, any technique. Now, having been introduced to this Dzogchen view on meditation practice and seeing these three phases of meditation in general, what are the distinguishing characteristics of the Dzogchen meditation? Well, they are, number one, resting in the view, not trying to improve or change things, but reconnecting with that glimpse or that recognition of the perfection or the natural completeness of things left just as they are. So great letting go or allowing. And second, total attention or awareness to the present moment, nowness in a word, the practice of nowness, the practice of authentic presence, just being present, not doing but being. And the third principle of Dzogchen meditation is not meditating, not trying to meditate or control the mind, letting it go free. As the master said, it's like releasing a pigeon from a ship in the middle of the sea. You don't need to keep it on the end of a kite string. There's nowhere for that pigeon to go but to return back to the ship. Similarly, we can allow our thoughts and perceptions and our minds to run free and simply be aware of it, just like children playing. There's nowhere it can be lost. There's nowhere for it to go except back to its base, to its isness, to the nature of mind. So this is called non-meditation, the natural meditation of allowing things to arise and dissolve on their own, in their own way. And fourth principle of Dzogchen meditation is total openness and inclusive awareness, panoramic, choiceless awareness with room for everything, sounds, sights, smells, tastes, touches, feelings, emotions, thoughts, whatever arises in the field of perception, outer and inner, phenomena and noumena, mind stuff. Openness and awareness inseparable. These four are the main principles of Dzogchen meditation. How do we practice this meditation? We practice it basically sitting, with eyes open, with gaze straight ahead or uplifted a little bit, not our head tilted back, but our gaze, our eyes slightly uplifted in soft focus, sky gazing style. One of my teachers in Nepal, Chukyi Nyima Rinpoche, when we asked him how to practice Mahamudra in Dzogchen, he laughed, and he's a very, very learned Lama. We expected a wonderful discourse from him, but he showed us how. His hands stuck straight out, with his fingers stuck out. His eyes went up as big as saucers, and he went, ah, like a bird electrified on a wire. That's the moment of Dzogchen meditation. Ah! Totally bright, vivid, and lucid. Moment after moment. That's the moment of Dzogchen. The freshness. The moment of creation. The first moment. Every moment is that first moment. That's the moment of nowness. That's where we live. That's the timeless time. That's the moment of Dzogchen. That's the practice of Dzogchen. We practice according to the teaching of the four great flops or drops. The four great plops I like these translations because they have so many funny associations. We're translating the word in Tibetan, Chokshak Shi, the four great leavings it as it is, the four great letting goes. Letting go of the body, totally dropping the body in its own place, in its own time. Great plopping, dropping, just self-settling by itself. And second, the great naturalness or dropping, plopping of speech, of energy. Just dropping it off like a guitar string, unstrung. Just dropping it. And third, dropping the mind. Letting it go totally. As it says in the Diamond Sutra of the Transcendental Wisdom Scriptures, the Prajnaparamita of Buddhism, cultivate the awareness that sticks nowhere, that fixates nowhere. Or an even more modern translation, let the mind go wherever it wants and rest in awareness. So having dropped off body, having dropped off speech or energy or expression, what remains? That's the final drop zone. Just drop into that and let it be. That's authentic presence, a Rigpa, a primordial being. That's Buddha, mind, naked in its natural state, in its natural habitat. So with these four droppings or four naturalnesses, we start to unleash the uninhibited spontaneity and creativity of our own nature and get out of our own way, and we can really start to express ourselves more clearly and freely, and communication that works both ways, and we can give as well as receive much more openly. This openness and awareness, this view and meditation, naturally starts to spill over and be integrated into our daily life through the conduct or the practice of enlightened living, the action that is the result of the view and meditation of Dzogchen, the natural great perfection. We've talked about the view of the great perfection and recognizing or glimpsing, discovering our own innate Buddha mind, Rigpa. We've talked about how to rest in that great view and get used to it, how to mature it and develop it further through the meditation of Dzogchen. That's Rigpa practice. Now third in this development, this scheme of the path of awakening to the innate great perfection, Dzogchen, we're going to talk about action, enlightened living, manifesting Rigpa in daily life, living the body of Buddha's love and truth, walking the talk. Because I really feel this, the path of holiness today courses through the path of action. Contemplation is a very important balancing part of the spiritual life, but today I think we have to be in this world, not just withdraw from it. And integration is the name of the game. Ironing out this view and meditation, this mindful awareness, this openness and this loving acceptance of joy of spirit, ironing this out into everyday life. This is what I call dancing with life, action, or Buddha activity, enlightened living in the great perfection. I remember my dear friend and colleague, Dharma teacher, Jack Kornfield, telling the story that I call dandelion farming, which very much exemplifies this kind of action or this view and meditation coming forth as sane and beautiful action in daily life. Jack is my kind of lineage master of these funny stories, and I follow along in his wise and funny footsteps. There was a guy in California who had a large corner property, and no matter how much he tried to grow grass on it and have a lawn, it was always overrun by dandelions. He asked his friends and neighbors to try to keep up with the Joneses, with the grass holders, how they managed. And they gave him advice about this kind of fertilizer and that kind of weed killer, about pulling the dandelions up by the roots. And I know about this, having grown up in a corner house in Long Island. If you don't get the root, you might as well not waste your time. This is an important Buddhist principle. Nothing worked. Finally, he went to the Department of Conservation, to a bioscientist who did tests on the earth and the wind and the rain and took pH and soil samples to find out why his corner was so infested with dandelions. And finally the scientist came with his report and he said, "You know, you're never going to have a green lawn here. This corner is best suited for dandelion farming." And then he gave the guy a whole list of uses for dandelions, as dandelion salad, as dandelion healing tea, and so many uses for dandelions. And this guy took pictures and he made many beautiful nature shots of dandelion mandalas. And he, in fact, had the unique dandelion garden in the whole West Coast. And this is the principle of dandelion farming. It's the very unwanted things in our life that often are the richness that we overlook. We would like to have it different, but this is how we are. This is how we dance through life, walking our talk, practicing what we teach. This is doubly important, not just on the one hand, not to be a hypocrite, but on the other hand, because we all teach and espouse what we most need to learn. That's why we're focused on it. So it's very important to practice what we teach. And I avoid the word preach here for obvious reasons. As we embody sometimes so rarefied seeming Dharma, to ground it in our bodies, in our souls, in our life, in our family, in our relationships, in our parenting, and in our work. The view of Dzogchen, the great perfection, the discovery of our own Buddha-ness, and seeing the light, that light in others and all as well. And getting used to that through the meditation practice, through cultivating that recognition and maturing it, finally brings us into action, into life, into activity, into enlightened living, where it counts. This inner sun of wisdom that we've kindled, that we fanned into flames, its rays naturally shine out impartially upon all, its warm, loving light rays of love and compassion, of altruism and unselfish service in the world. The spiritual seeker awakening on the journey of enlightenment, the bodhisattva, has two wings, not just the wings of wisdom and meditation, but the other wing of love and compassion, winging his or her way to enlightenment or in the space of freedom. Wisdom and compassion, truth and love go together. Wisdom without love is sterile, dry. Love without wisdom is blind. So it's very important to bring this Dharma into daily life, this spirit, this truth and wisdom that we are realizing as we grow and develop spiritually. Picking up our meditation cushions and learning to walk, not just being in our sick bed all the time, trying to become more and more enlightened, but actually living the enlightened life according to the principles of awakening, a moral, impeccable, loving life. Connecting with others, recognizing the interconnectedness, the sacredness, the beauty, the glory of all that lives. The entire mandala or hologram of being. So how do we do this? We have to keep schlepping to enlightenment. Sometimes it feels that way. Not just swooping down from above, maybe having a few crash landings, even a fatal one, with the ultimate view, but also continuing to cultivate and develop ourselves, perfecting our perfect selves endlessly. Through practice, through getting used to this view, through meditation, through service, through work, through serving God, through serving men and women. Service, seva, or karma yoga as a path to oneness with the divine, with the ultimate. Doing the best we can. Right livelihood, wise livelihood, doing what needs to be done. This is how we cultivate enlightened living. I think this is best embodied in the six principles of enlightened living, taught by all of my Lama teachers and coming down from the time of Buddha. The six perfections, the six paramitas in Sanskrit, the six transcendental virtues, in which we cultivate on outer and inner levels in our own life. First, generosity. Second, morality. Third, patience and forbearance. Fourth, energetic effort and diligence. Fifth, focused awareness and mindfulness, and sixth, wisdom and love. These values are not just values to believe in. Of course, we all believe in virtue, in morality, in wisdom and love, and so on. These are practices that we practice on outer, inner, and mystical levels, like generosity. We cultivate charity. We give material goods or money. We give medicine. We might give clothes and shelter. These are outer charities. But also innerly, cultivating generosity of spirit, opening our tight-fisted grasping, opening our hands and sharing of ourselves more, being more generous with our emotions, giving of our time, or yielding, softening up, giving up our positions, and so on. All of this comes into the inner generosity. Cultivating that is wise, enlightened living. And in the mystic level, being totally open and accepting. This is the ultimate generosity, giving our acceptance or blessing. And second, cultivating virtue in our life through self-discipline and moral living, through adhering to moral precepts like cherishing life and refraining from killing and harming, through being law-abiding, through not stealing and lying, and so on. This is outer morality. But in the inner level, through being straight with ourselves, through cultivating impeccable character, through character development, through not telling ourselves stories, through not fooling ourselves. And in the innate level, the mystical level, the ultimate virtue is being true to ourselves, is being authentic and genuine. And third, we cultivate the perfection of patience and forbearance, accepting, being in it for the long run, keeping the biggest picture, being like an elder who has seen many seasons come and go and been through many ups and downs, like a grandparent who can watch the children at play without getting caught up in their pretend war games. This is the third paramita, patience and acceptance. And fourth, the perfection or virtue of energy, of courage, of heroism, of diligence, of never giving up. As a Korean Zen master said, just go straight for 10,000 years. Not giving up, being in it for the longest possible run, having the biggest vision, bringing this kind of fearless heroism or courage to keep going into our lives and fulfilling all of our aspirations for ourselves and others for the benefit of the world. And on an inner level, this kind of courage or forbearance, really living by our principles and sticking to them. And the fifth transcendental virtue, or way that we bring this profound, sublime Dharma into daily life, according to the path of the Bodhisattva, the awakening spiritual seeker on the way to enlightenment, is meditation and awareness, cultivating mindfulness, cultivating attention, bringing a focused attention into our life. As Ralph Waldo Emerson said, the unreflected life is hardly worth living. We're not much different than the animals if we don't have some self-reflective capacity. So bringing this more into our lives, perhaps slowing down enough to pay attention, to take some time to be contemplative or analyze things or think about things and reflect on them and digest what happens to us in our experience and learn from our experiences. Perhaps to meditate, perhaps to go beyond mere thinking into the experiential through meditation and self-inquiry, through centering prayer, through physical meditations and contemplations like yoga practice, like martial arts practice, all of these trainings in inner mastery. These are all part of bringing this into daily life so we can meditate in action, not just walk with our eyes closed like zombies down the street, but so that we are perfectly aware. As the Buddha said, being fully aware of standing up when we stand up and being fully aware of sitting down when we sit down. This is wisdom. This is sanity. I know that doesn't sound very profound. It's not very highfalutin language, but it's very profound. It's reality testing at its finest. Because usually we're not aware what we're doing when we're doing it. That's why we slam the door on our finger. That's why we leave home and lock ourselves out having forgotten the keys. That's why we have car accidents. Why is it that some of us have so many accidents? Have you ever wondered, are they really accidents? Of course, Buddhists know there are no accidents. There's always some karmic reason. But Are they really accidents? Aren't some of us more accident-prone through perhaps inattentive habits? Of course. So paying attention really pays off, and cultivating awareness heals us in so many ways. This is the fifth transcendental virtue and practice of the Bodhisattva, cultivating mindfulness and awareness in life. And sixth, cultivating wisdom and love, growing in wisdom and love, awakening and illumining our mind while warming and opening our heart. As we say in Zen tradition, having eyes of ice and heart of fire. This brings together heaven and earth in this world, seeing clearly and objectively, but feeling fully, totally beyond rationality. We're not voting here for rationality alone. We're talking about totally using head and heart, both sides of our brain, to talk in modern terms, integrating body, mind, and spirit. Three in one. Three jewels. One jewel in the lotus. The lotus has six petals. These petals of daily life practice, the six transcendental virtues, generosity, ethical self-discipline, patient forbearance, energetic effort, mindful awareness, and wisdom and love. I remember in France, I lived in France in a Tibetan monastery in our three-year retreat cloister for 8 or 9 years in southern France in Dordogne Valley near the ancient cave sites of Lascaux where some of the earliest primitive art lives. And not that far from our dear friend, Master Thich Nhat Hanh's Plum Village. And the Dalai Lama came a few times to teach us. We invited him. We organized some public teachings in the retreat centers. And one of the very great old lamas of Tibet was there, living there in some of the last years of his life, Powo Rinpoche. Powo, the courageous, fearless bodhisattva, that's what his name means. This wise old lama and the Dalai Lama met one day for lunch in the private house where His Holiness the Dalai Lama was staying. I happened to be taking care of his things at that time, so I was there at that lunch, and His Holiness was talking to the elder Powo Rinpoche of Eastern Tibet. They were talking Tibetan, of course, and laughing together with their heads almost touching, talking very softly, since the elderly lama couldn't hear or see so well. And they were talking, and I heard some words, high Buddhist language of Sanskrit and Tibetan. God knows what they were talking about, but it sounded good to me. And suddenly, the dim-sighted, elderly, great master, Powo, interrupted His Holiness in mid-sentence, which is almost unheard of in Tibetan tradition. But there we were in sunny southern France in an old refurbished farmhouse. And the aged lama had spied a little ant struggling across the floor, across the cold stone floor, trying to get to the sunlight at the glass door, and asked His Holiness, the 14th Dalai Lama of Tibet, to interrupt their philosophical talk and their sharing of memories together. Because he himself, the elderly lama, couldn't get up and help the ant, he implored His Holiness the Dalai Lama, his spiritual senior, to go over and perform that little favor for him, to pick up the ant and put it outside in the sun. And even as I'm telling the story, like the old spiritual devotee that I truly am at heart, the sloppy bhakti, I'm tearing over thinking of that moment. And I'll never forget that, and the realization that all of this talk about spirit, all of this rarefied philosophy and talk about enlightenment, it all comes down to that kind of heart open and present attention. Although the old lama's eyes were no longer keen, his attention, his caring, loving, wise vision was open in all directions, even to a tiny little ant struggling along a cold stone floor towards the light and the sun. And that was far more important to both of these truly great enlightened masters. And I say that with all my heart. That was more important than talking about the heights of Buddhist philosophy or the exigencies of their conquered country of Tibet and their shared memories. This inspires me today to think about what I can do day to day. What are the practical little gifts that I can give? Because every gift repays itself manyfold, doesn't it? And we only get what we can give. It's a karmic law. We have to open ourselves enough for the giving and the receiving to start moving both ways. How do we arrive at this beautiful human and yet somehow mysteriously a definitely exalted state of mind as exemplified by that old lama, the courageous master, Paul Rinpoche? I think it's not by only going inwards into meditation, prayer, and contemplation. I can assure you, man cannot live by Dharma alone. I've tried. And on the other hand, it's not just by going outwards and outwards and giving and giving and giving ourselves away, being codependent or wounded healers, giving too much away, not taking care of ourselves, being busybodies or do-gooders who sometimes make more trouble than we alleviate. It's by finding the balance, the great middle way, as the Buddha talked about, the balance, the golden mean, balancing our outer and inner lives, sometimes alone, sometimes with others, sometimes taking care of another, sometimes taking care of ourselves or our body. I think it's very important to consider this and reflect on this for ourselves. What is the proper balance for ourselves? Especially if we feel perhaps drained or worn out and exhausted, or worse, depressed, alienated, always fatigued. I myself, when I began in the late 60s and early 70s in college, then later in India and Nepal, created a list of daily necessities for me. I found this written in my notebook. An old notebook that I wrote down in 1971 in Nepal when I was living at Lama Yeshe's monastery, my first teacher's monastery, outside Kathmandu on a hilltop at Kopan. It begins with a quote from my main guru, the Buddha Karmapa. If you have 100% dedication and confidence in Dharma teaching and practice, then every living situation is part of your spiritual path and practice. You can be living the practice fully instead of just trying to do it. Then I have a list here called Tips and Pointers for Building a Spiritual Life from Scratch from the great Hindu and Tibetan masters in India in those days. I'll just read this. It's kind of like a little poem. You can reflect on this and maybe take some of these into your life. It begins in the morning. And every day is a new day. Let's remember that. It's never too late to begin. The great path, the highway of awakening, begins right beneath your feet with the next step. First, wake up. This is very important. I want to underline this. Very important. First, in the morning, wake up. And second, especially for me at that time, very important, stay awake. We used to wake up at a god-awful hour, I assure you. Next, wash, then bow, then meditate, pray, chant, sing, breathe, and smile, relax, enjoy, accept. And moving on into the day, move, do yoga, walk, exercise. Work, serve, contribute, give and receive, listen, learn, explore and inquire, cultivate oneself, enhance competencies, be content, cultivate flexibility and patience, friendship and collaboration. Lighten up, dream a little, laugh, and play. Celebrate. Give thanks. Evolve. Love. Walk softly. Live gently. Radiate. Dissolve. Now we're getting toward the night. Surrender. Trust. Rest. Take rest. Be born anew. If you take some of these practices into your life, and maybe you don't have all day to do this as I did then, living the monastic life, I think you'll find that your spiritual life will come to you. It will reward you manyfold. We used to do a lot of rituals and practices of all kinds, traditional practices, music, chanting, prayers, offerings on the altar, sacred painting and dance, meditation, visualization, and so on, translate the scriptures. These all cultivate our attention and our authentic presence. They enhance the luster of being. They help us light ourselves up from within. Here are a few little rituals for today that we can bring into our daily life. Breathe and smile wherever you are. Just take a moment to breathe and smile. Do the smiling yoga. It relaxes your entire body. Do standing meditation while waiting in line for a movie or a red light or a train. Just stop. Stand. Let go. Tune in. Find that drop zone and drop into that. Come home to yourself and rest. Awake. Third little ritual for bringing spiritual awareness and grace into daily life. Whenever you sit down or stand up, stop and appreciate a moment of change, of transition, of freedom. Don't just rush on to the next thing as if you're staggering forward under the momentum of events, like staggering forward on a treadmill. Notice every transition and just stop for a moment and acknowledge it. Some say mantras or prayers every time they cross a lintel or go through a door to remind themselves. It's like entering a new moment or a new life. Say grace or have a moment of mindfulness or hand-holding before every meal. It's good for everyone concerned, you and others. Walk barefoot on carpet or grass or sand, feeling every step. Or walk on the edge of a beach with your eyes closed where the water meets the sand, feeling your way along like a primeval creature on the edge of sand, sea, and sky, and lose yourself totally. Perhaps find your true primordial self. Sing, chant, or pray till you totally forget and lose yourself. Then stop and drop into a moment of inexpressible isness. See who is present in that moment, beyond concepts, self stories, and strategies. Another ritual of Dharma in daily life today is to experience simple, repetitive work, hard work like chopping wood or carrying bricks or digging in the earth, or softer work like sewing, embroidering, washing dishes, as a meditation in action. Not just sweeping the dust, but cleaning up your act and clearing your heart and mind. Focusing totally on the moment in hand and enjoying, savoring and appreciating the miracle of this very moment. As the Tibetans say, this moment, only moment. One of my favorite rituals I call the mindful pilgrimage. I try to slow myself down enough during one day a week that I choose by taking 3 breaths before I enter any new activity. You can try this when you get up, just sit up in bed, take 3 breaths, collect yourself and have a moment of mindfulness. Then go and rush to the bathroom and do whatever you have to do. Take the next point in the morning, perhaps while you're shaving or brushing your teeth or brushing your hair. Let's take showering. That's a good place. Our morning ablutions. Just stand under the water. Let the hot water course over your head or hit the back of your head at the top of your spine and relax. Take 3 or 4 or 6, 7 breaths and let it all go. Let it all wash away. And you can do this at any other point in the day. Let's say we're moving along through my mindful pilgrim's day. When going out the door, stop at the door, put your hand on the doorknob, and before you rush out, just take 3 mindful breaths. 3 breaths to awakening before going out. Then go and sit down in the car or your commuter train or bus and do the same. Take 3 breaths to awakening and then proceed. And so on, going throughout the day at different intervals whenever you can. Cultivate mindfulness in daily life through these many quickies, these instant mini meditations, very American meditations. It only takes 5, 6 seconds, 10 seconds. Let the phone ring an extra time. Take 3 breaths to awakening. And then answer the phone just a little softer and more present. And similarly, on the way home, coming to the outside door, put your hand on the doorknob, take 3 breaths, and recognize you've completed your day, and then enter the house, and so on. I think this 3 breaths to awakening is a very simple practice that any mindful pilgrim can integrate into his or her daily life, slowing us down, creating more space and clarity in our lives. For simplifying our lives, we really have to simplify and clarify our minds. Not just clean out our cluttered closets, shelves, attics, and basements, and trunks of our cars and garages, but to clear out and clean out, simplify and clarify our minds, which clutter all that stuff up for us. And for that, there's no better tool than Dzogchen meditation. It's so flexible, so formless, it can fit into any form of activity. We can bring this view to bear on almost any activity, transforming it into an application of wisdom and connectedness and dynamism in action. This is the beauty of the Dzogchen view in meditation. It enhances any practice that we do, religious practice or otherwise, connecting us with the sacred in every moment of daily life, wherever we are. That's why we always say Dzogchen is the ultimate practice. It can enhance any practice, turn it into an ultimate practice. And moreover, I like to say, in my own American way, Dzogchen is more fun. As the timeless wisdom of the East comes to the West and takes root here, as we bring Dharma into daily life, as emerges in American Buddhism and beyond Buddhism or anyism, a contemporary Western Dharma, Western spirituality, non-sectarian, post-denominational, practical, socially conscious, egalitarian, gender equal, contemporary spirituality. There are a few basic questions and areas that come up for us, especially how we live the Dharma in daily life, not just on our meditation cushion, but how we use our workplace to grow spiritually, finding our true work, doing what has to be done, right livelihood. One of the main areas, I think, today of difficulty for many of us is relationship. This area of relationships, how we can grow spiritually rather than getting caught in unfulfilling patterns and ruts in relationship. Of course, there are relationships to oneself, relationships to that which is beyond ourselves also, relationships to our pets, relationships to our colleagues, family and friends, parents and children. But particularly intimate relationships, I think, is one of the great challenges today. And relationship is a contact sport. That's why I like to think of it as relationship. There's a lot of body work to be done there. Or relationship yoga, intimate relationships as a gateway or path to the highest, to enlightenment, or to God, however you like to think of it. Plato said that love is the pursuit of the whole. I think for today we have to look at it as the pursuit of the experience of wholeness. We all want an experience, not just something to believe in, but an experience of wholeness, of completeness, of bliss, if you like. The yoga of relationship is very, very vital and relevant to this pursuit. Love can transport us, take us beyond ourselves. In fact, it should and it must to be true love. Human love is connected to and part and parcel of spiritual love, of divine love, of unconditional Buddha-like love. Human love is the tip of the iceberg of this other, greater, transpersonal or divine, unconditional Buddha love. Having the right partner or mate in life can help us grow immensely spiritually, just like having the right vocation or finding the right spiritual path or practice, or for that matter, having the good fortune to connect with the right spiritual elder, master, or guru, or mentor. For a mentor or a master is like a mirror in which we can see our highest and best self, our wise self, and realize it for ourselves. Not to imitate them, but to find our own highest wise self. Not to collect mirrors, but to better see and know our true self. A good relationship can serve similarly in being a mirror to reflect who and what we are, good and bad. As we all know, nothing pushes our buttons better than those we are closest to. Therefore, there is nowhere to hide, and this is congruent with our pursuit of self-knowledge and liberation. To find the right spiritual mate or soulmate, as sometimes called in the West, in India we call it sati, mate, spiritual partner on the path to the highest, together on our way to joint awakening. For that, there are many kinds of practices, everything from serving God through serving your mate and your family and society, as the Hindus would say, all the way up to sacred sex, to sex as a practice of tantra, of experiencing transcendence or self-loss and self-realization. Sacred sex, tantra, the principle of being everything can be part of the spiritual path. There is almost no energy more powerful than our own passion, lust, and desire. When we can turn that into a propellant towards enlightenment, we travel the path much more swiftly and powerfully. I remember one of my Lama friends. He had escaped from Tibet in 1959 when the Chinese conquered his country. He had lived as a refugee in India. He ended up in America, and he married an American. And after some years, they had a falling out. They lived together at his meditation center, and they parted ways amicably. In those days, I had images of how spiritual teachers are perfect, and their lives were far more perfect and ideal than mine. You know, in the spiritual world, enlightenment always seems shinier on the other side. But let's not be deceived by that projection. So I said, Rinpoche, why are you getting divorced? And he said, Surya, my wife and I are no longer generating bodhicitta, or heart, love, and compassion and growth together. I thought that was a very profound answer. That was a soul-centered commitment to a marriage. If that wasn't there, they both felt, why go on? Relationship is a test of our mettle. It's a hot fire, but an important one. I think if we want to have that heart's connection, it's very important to cultivate just a few principles. Principles of honoring and respecting the other as they are, learning to accept them and see the light in them as they are, not always trying to change them for the better. So the principle of honoring and respecting is crucial. Some sense of patience and forbearance, being in it for the long run, not being deceived by the temporary ups and downs and bumps along the road, and there will be even major potholes, if not earthquakes and avalanches. Also listening, learning to listen, and learning to talk together and having true communication. Very important. I think trust And honesty is crucial also in relationships today. It takes trust to just be present with another. It takes trust to simply be yourself, to reveal yourself, to let yourself be seen, no longer to hide. Relationships can help us come out of the closet in so many ways. Relationships can find us a safe ground to let go totally. Relationship is a great place to do our true work in this world. If we have the right partners, if we also make good friends with ourselves, we can learn to walk the path together with our eyes and our hearts set on the same goal, with joined hands, yet not just totally turned towards each other, but together turned towards something within but beyond both of us, all of us. If the Buddha was alive today, I should say, the Buddha today would say or says, right relationships is an important part of the Eightfold Path of Enlightenment. Wise relationships. Also, having a good sense of humor and wise exercise, I'm sure, would be additional steps on the path of enlightenment for today. I think it's very important to be honest with ourselves about who we are and what we seek and want and what's right for us. And really see what do we love and care about and who we most love to be with, not because we think we should be out of obligation or any other reason, strategy, but who and what we really love. What brings the most love into our life day to day? That's a question that I often ask myself as a touchstone. Is it working more? Is it being in with the in crowd or being in with the om crowd? Is outer success that satisfying? What brings the most love day to day? Who do I really want to be with in my free time on the weekend or holidays or vacations? Who do I really want to call? But there's no reason to call them. There's no need to call them. So their name falls way to the bottom of the to-do list. And yet that's the one call that may be most important to me today, to keep my heart alive, not just my life going or my career active. If I leave you with any thought about how to bring this Dharma into daily life, how to dance with life, I don't think the question is what music we need to have playing. I don't think the question is whether we know how to dance. I think the question is what brings us the most love. Who would we like to dance with? Or even alone? Where and how shall we dance? For we are all alone together in this cosmic dance of the universe, the ultimate relationship, the dance of the one and the many, the cosmic lila or sport or dance that we are all part of. If we recognize through the view and through getting used to it, through meditation and practice, if we can discover and further develop and finally perfect and stabilize or realize the unity and diversity, this is the ultimate view. This is balancing heaven and earth. This is grounding ourselves in reality, the ultimate reality of the timeless infinite with the conventional relative existence of this very moment in this very world where we live. As human beings, as Buddha's bodies of love incarnate. This is the ultimate fruit of the natural great perfection, the radiant heart of spirit, of Dharma, Dzogchen.
Zawa Dezoi Lama Rinpoche.
This concludes Take 2 of Natural Perfection with Lama Suryadas. Our program continues with Take 3.